And here she is, the hottest woman to ever govern the coldest state, Sarah Palin!
Hello, America! Oh, and hello to the great state of Washington, D.C. My name is... Sarah Palin! Yeah, that's it! And I'm here to talk right at you. Now, as you know, I got a book on the bestseller list, Going Rogue, and a lot of people have encouraged me to run for president in 2012. But of course, many of them are Democrats, but you betcha, yeah! Hey, but you know, seriously, folks, in the meantime, I haven't just been home making whale blubber brownies. No siree. I got a new job. It's on the Fox News. I'm going to be an on-air contributionist. You know, who'd have think after all these years of shooting Fox, Fox will be shooting me. But I'm a little disappointed. I'm going to have to cancel my global book signing tour. Yeah, that's too bad. I was really looking forward to seeing West Korea. Hey, speaking of which, you know, in my book, I have a whole chapter on my foreign policy experience. And on that page, there's a lot of interesting facts. But don't take my word for it. Take a look. See my quotes. Gee, I can't wait to see what I wrote. Starting here, starting now. Honey, everything's coming up roguey. If my book seems to boast, did you know it was written by ghosts? They quote God and the Todd, and they seem to agree that I'm roguey. I'm not vicious, no, I'm an advocate for birds and fishes. Bald eagle is quite delicious. Sales are up. This is it. And the White House is where I will sit. I'll be swell. I'll be great. Like I was in my state. As president, I'll be a roguette. And then 2 years into my first term,
thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. We're listening to the Keystone XL Pipeline with Greg Dalton. The guests argue about the Canadian tar sands and the Keystone XL Pipeline.
So Cassie Doyle, what's the path to avoid those kind of impacts? You see countries doing different things, some dirty, some clean. What do you see as the path to avoid the dangers that both Dan and Sam have laid out today?
Well, I see it from the perspective of how you set higher efficiency and environmental standards in the overall energy system. Because when, if Dan, you say it doesn't matter if we get it from somewhere else, I would argue it does matter where it comes from. And this campaign on Keystone has been directly focused on Canada. And yet California produces heavy crude oil that has a higher carbon intensity than Canada. So I'm just saying that. And Venezuela is right now a major supplier to the U.S. of heavy crude oil with an equal carbon intensity to Canada. But what I see as a pathway is to address demand, which this president administration is doing, and Canada is aligned in a movement to try to increase by I think 50% the efficiency of one of our major components or contributors to GHG emissions is transportation. So to clean that fleet is really important. Canada and the U.S. are aligned. We're the only two countries that are working on those very efficient light duty and heavy duty fleet standards. I think it's really important, all in terms of the efficiency, as well as increasingly stringency in terms of the safety of pipelines. So the Keystone Pipeline would have 57 additional conditions that will make it the safest pipeline that's ever been built. So the continuously trying to improve the overall environmental performance as we move towards who knows what the future is. These pipelines and these investments are all private investments. So they're being made on the basis of an open market, as I'm saying. And as an investor, Dan, you know that they're looking at what the actual demand and market's going to be. But impacting and having an influence on how energy is used, I think, is really important.
So we could keep using fossil fuels. It sounds a little bit like saying we can keep smoking, but we should put filters on the cigarettes. Right? That somehow we'll make it less bad and it'll be okay and we'll die more slowly rather than die faster. Sam Avery?
Well, to continue that analogy, it's like saying, well, this particular cigarette isn't going to kill me, so I might as well burn it. Or, right. You know, if I don't smoke it, somebody else will. So I might as well smoke it. I mean, you can get, the mind forms all kinds of rationalizations for consuming things. But the bottom line is that this deposit in Canyon, in Canada, is measured in the trillions of barrels of tar sand. It's enough to do the job. There's enough carbon in that deposit alone that we have to be careful about. We have to decide consciously whether we're going to follow our appetite or whether we're going to follow our intelligence about making the decision, do we tap into this new enormous source of carbon or do we invest our money in renewable sources?
And a lot of people have invested in renewable sources, including Dan Miller, and you have to admit that biofuels have been disappointing. We've had lots of people here that said biofuels are going to do great things. You can drop them in, put them in your car, existing refineries. And Dan Miller, they haven't delivered on some of their hype and promises.
Well, there's a general thing in technology field in general that people overestimate the impact in the short run and underestimate the impact in the long run. That certainly applies to this field as well. Everybody wanted it next Tuesday. It takes a little while. There's people working on these enzymes for cellulosic use of plant material that have taken a few more years than they thought. But actually, even Solazyme has run a 500,000-liter tank of oil development. It was the largest ever, I believe. And they're building new plants and things like that. There's other companies that are actually coming online soon. It's been a year or two longer than they thought. But that's still a drop in the bucket compared to...
And Solazyme is focusing more on cosmetics and oils, things that are low volume, high margin, where they can make more money.
Well, right now. But yeah. But the problem, one of the problems is that fuel is the cheapest thing you can make. It's about the same price as bottled water. When you think about it, it's like $3 a gallon, right? Go in the store and buy a bottle, big gallon of water. So, and there are other oils that are more expensive, but still, by the way, harm the environment quite a bit, like palm oil and things like that. So they're going to focus on the ones that can have the biggest economic impact in the short run as they build up capacity and as these other companies build up capacity. So that is an alternative, but there are other alternatives, by the way. Electric cars, really people shouldn't be driving personal transportation with gasoline. I mean, an electric car is better than a gasoline-powered car in every way except for range and price, and those two things are getting better quickly. A few years, everyone will be looking back and going, why were we doing this? It's not true for airplanes, trucks, and heavy equipment. We're still going to need liquid transportation fuels, which have very high energy density. And that's when, by improving the efficiency of those, we can still burn the oil that we have, but not find new ones and scale it down as we scale up the other. It's not that tomorrow biofuels are going to replace fossil fuel. But over time, we have to have a plan for moving downward. As they say, you know, so we have a climate problem. It's a big problem. And you can say we're in a hole. And as they say, the first rule of getting out of a hole is to stop digging. So the Keystone Pipeline is more than just a pipe of fossil fuels coming into our country. It is a symbol, too. We have to make the change sometime. We should have done it 20 years ago. But if we don't do it like in the next, according to Jim Hansen on this stage, said we have 3 years left to begin reducing fossil fuel emissions globally, or we won't have a stable climate for our children. 3 years left. So if we don't start now, when are we going to do it?
Tune in to great speeches and interviews from 6 to 8 p.m. on Sundays on Access Sacramento, or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com. See the big picture on financial, military, environmental crises, war and peace, the economy, and climate change are covered. And then there's music and humor. Challenge your thinking with great speeches and interviews from 6 to 8 p.m. on Sundays, or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
draft is coming. It's blowing down the door, so pack your bags, boys and girls. We're all going off to war. You can be the next diver, Halliburton. Pull the cord, drape the flag, and draw the curtain. You can pull the trigger for the Exxon Corporation. Watch the cities burn around you while you're standing at your station. You can shoot the children as they throw stones at your Humvee. You can die for Kerry or maybe for Dick Cheney. The draft is coming. It's blowing down the door, so pack your bags, boys and girls. We're all going off to war. When your tours are over and you come back, maybe you can go to college if you survived Iraq. With you dust in your lungs, you can learn a trade. In your dying years, you'll have it made. When you're coughing up your last breath beneath the overpass, you'll be praying for the fortunes of the military brass. The draft is coming. It's blowing down the door, so pack your bags, boys and girls. We're all going off to war. But you can be proud about the cause for which you died. At least you fought for freedom, unlike the other side. They were setting off car bombs while you dropped them from the sky. You sold the country off to whatever company would buy. Shut their papers down and shot them for their liberty. So as you die, you know you left the world just a bit more free. The draft is coming. It's blowing down the door, so pack your bags, boys and girls. We're all going off to war. Yes, you can die for oil and watch history repeat. Fight for empire in the desert and go down in defeat. Or maybe it could happen that now in the second round, we will take the struggle higher and this time hear the sound of the chimes of freedom ringing when we take Washington, D.C. Cause opportunity is knocking. Oh, say, can you see the draft is coming?
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Climate One. We're talking about the Keystone XL pipeline and the oil from Canada. I'm Greg Dalton. You can follow us with a Twitter handle at Climate One. Sam Avery, it's not happening fast enough.
It's not. And I think we can do it much more rapidly. Something Dan was talking about made me think. I'm a solar installer. And an example of an alternative form of energy is a single solar panel, 250-watt solar panel, will produce about 1,500 miles of driving per year for 30 to 50 years. One solar panel, 1,500 miles of driving every year for 30 to 50 years. Put 14 of them on your roof, and you've got 21,000 miles of driving a year. Now, that'll cost you $12,000 to $15,000. And it's all up front. You've got to pay that all up front. But if you do that, you will be driving for at most 2.2 cents per mile. For 600,000 to a million miles. And this is about 8.5 times less than you're spending for gasoline right now. So over the lifetime of the solar panels, you will save $100,000 and more, and you won't need a tar sands pipeline.
Greg Croft, you're a lifelong oil man. Do you see prospect in electric vehicles or biofuels?
I think electric vehicles are actually what it's going to eventually be, say 100 years down the road, because as we gradually consume more and more fossil fuels, the cost gets to be an issue, availability gets to be an issue. If you look at world oil production, it's been pretty flat since about 2005. And what's happened actually is consumption has declined in the United States as places like China and India have increased their production. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to count on continuing to have our entire transportation system driven by liquid fossil fuels, which is essentially the way it works now, you're sort of making a cap and saying for some countries to come up, others have to come down. And that's going to be a big challenge. But when you look at the volumes of energy we consume now, that's a cautionary note on biofuel. Just America's oil energy consumption exceeds the energy content of all the food produced in the world for everybody. And if you look at, you know, a lot of promises have been made about cellulosic biofuels. A reasonable proxy for cellulose production in California is the historical timber production. California's timber production reached its historical peak in 1955 and has declined hugely since then. California's oil production didn't didn't peak until 1985. And so these so-called renewable resources, if they're extracted at several times the rate at which they renew themselves, end up acting just like non-renewable resources. That the problem, and I think this has actually come around with all the panelists, whichever side of this we're on, gets back to the volume of consumption. As long as we're, and that consumption, when it comes to fossil fuels, is what drives the total carbon emissions. And as long as the whole world consumes more and more of this, the carbon emissions are going to increase.
Greg Croft is a lecturer at St. Mary's College of California. I want to talk about another pipeline, the Trans Mountain Pipeline. It seems like there's all different ways that this oil from Canada is going to try to get to a market, get to ocean where it can get the world price. Some of that's through the east, some of that's through the south. There's a pipeline that the San Francisco Chronicle, David Baker, wrote about recently, many people hadn't heard about, that actually could bring some of this oil to California. So Cassie Doyle, tell us about the plans to expand that. The people in British Columbia, not so happy about it, but there are plans to get another pipeline to the west from the oil sands, and some of that would come by ship into California.
Right, and in fact, right now, California does receive oil coming out of Canada.
2 or 3% of California.
California oil is coming from Canada, and it's increasing as the oil from the north slopes of Alaska is declining. That's a well-established pipeline called the Trans Mountain. It comes out of northern Alberta through British Columbia, and its terminal is in Burnaby, which is just outside of Vancouver, and that there are plans, that's run by Kinder Morgan, there are plans to expand the capacity of that pipeline. That's what's under review now. That pipeline has been running, I think it's 25 or 30 years or so, so it's pretty well established. There are also other plans to bring a pipeline through a northern corridor up through the northern British Columbia that would be essentially for Asian markets.
So there's an election in British Columbia next month, and the leading candidate for premier of British Columbia, Adrian Dix, has been quite stridently opposed to that. So it seems like there's going to be these are political issues in Canada as well as in the United States, and it looks like the people who are more opposed to that pipeline might get in power in British Columbia.
That's quite true, and there certainly is no end to politics around climate change in both of our countries, I'd say.
Well, it's one reason that the Canada wants to build these pipelines is, especially to Asian markets, and the keystone to get to the Gulf, is that there's sort of a glut of Canadian oil in the mid part of our country, and it's like, I think it's a $20 discount to the global price of oil. So they don't like getting the discounted price. They want the world price. And so actually there's a lot of people say that the Keystone Pipeline will actually raise the price of oil in the United States by, I think, $4 billion a year is what I read. Because then once it's down to the Gulf, then if we don't pay the full price, then it could be exported to different countries at the global price. So there's another thing it's always been argued that it's a great thing for the United States. I mean, I know we're taking advantage. And by the way, I should say, if you think Canada, and Cassie actually especially, does a great job of promoting clean energy. As a clean tech investor, we have an investment actually in Canada, a clean tech company, and they're doing it. I think it's actually a better way to go for Canada, to keep building up the clean tech part of the business than to keep working on the tar sands and exploiting that, although the dollars up there are very, very big.
Sam Avery, you wrote a book about the path of the Keystone Pipeline. Tell us about some of the people you met, including Randy Thompson, very colorful character in Nebraska, who says, water is clean or dirty, it's not red or blue. Tell us about that.
Randy Thompson is the face of Bold Nebraska, which is a group which is adamantly opposing the Keystone XL in Nebraska. And as I notice I used a car, and that's part of the whole demand situation, and I take responsibility for that. But I met Randy and many people all the way from Alberta, where the tar sands are, all the way down to Texas. Randy is a typical rancher in Nebraska in many ways. The pipeline is scheduled to cross his land, and he objects to it originally not for any sort of climate reasons, but because it went across his land, and because this is not traditional crude oil. It's sold as, or it's being marketed as another form of crude oil, but it's not. It's tar sand. We call it oil sand. You can tell which side of the issue people are on, whether they call it oil sand or tar sand, but it's black, it's gooey, it's sticky, it's solid at room temperature. It quacks and it's a duck. But at any rate, that's the reason why a lot of people are opposed to the pipeline along the route. Because if this pipeline breaks, and I know it's the safest pipeline ever built, but there's never been a pipeline that doesn't break. And I was told that by a pipeline builder. So they are concerned that their ranches, their farms that they have invested their entire lives in are taking an enormous risk of being ruined for miles around. And his farm is actually near the Ogallala Aquifer, which I'm sure you've heard about before. When I was there in Nebraska last summer, it was an enormous drought, an enormous hot weather spell. It was climate change in action. And the surface waters had dried up. The Platte River was gone. No water at all in it. Everybody who survived the drought last summer tapped into the Ogallala Aquifer to irrigate their crops. It's that valuable to them. That is a life source for people in Nebraska and other Great Plains states. They're very protective of it, and this is the issue for them.
But can I just add, you know, that the Ogallala Reserve is crisscrossed by hundreds of miles of old pipeline now.
Not this tar sands pipeline.
Well, and really the science now, has not proven that there's any noticeable difference between the two when it comes to the impact of spills. There is now an increase in the amount of oil being transported by rail. And there's projections that it could be up to 500,000 barrels per day going out by rail that will be crossing across a lot of farmland over both countries that has a higher incidence of safety issues.
That's a risk, too. There's no doubt. They're both risky.
One note. There was a well-noted case in Kalamazoo, Michigan. In 2012, the U.S. federal government fined Enbridge, a Canadian pipeline company, almost $4 million for a spill that occurred there that closed 35 miles of the Kalamazoo River for about 2 years after spilling 1 million gallons. Greg Croft, there are some differences between dilbit, the tar that comes through the pipeline, and conventional oil. We've seen that spill recently in Arkansas. So tell us the difference between tar sands. Some people say it sinks in water. It's a different kind of animal than regular crude oil.
Yeah, there's actually, when we talk about, we have conventional crude oil is produced, pumped through a pipeline. You separate the oil from the natural gas. Once you've removed the gas phase, you just pump it through a pipeline, and that works pretty simply. What you have to do with a tar sands oil, because of the viscosity of it, when it's produced, it will not go through a pipeline unless it's hot. So what you do is you either put in a diluent to reduce the viscosity. What they use is naphtha. Naphtha is the very lightest product of a refinery. It's lighter than gasoline. And they mix this with this really heavy tarry material. Then when it gets to the receiving end at the refinery, they actually just run it through a hot chamber, boil off the naphtha, and pipeline it back to a much smaller diameter pipeline. And that's just what's called dilbit. Then there's what's called synbit, where they take a refined oil and mix it back with the crude oil in order to once again reduce the viscosity so that it can be put through a pipeline.
And doesn't this stuff sink? It reacts differently in water?
The original bitumen will sink in water. What happens with a dilbit, if you spill it, at first it's lighter than water until the naphtha evaporates off. And the biggest concern about a spill, like if you were in that town in Arkansas, is both breathing the fumes and the potential fire hazard from the naphtha, not necessarily the heavy oil, but the diluent is the bigger half of the problem.
And are they not still cleaning up the spill in Michigan, Kalamazoo, Michigan?
I think some of that's still ongoing.
Here it is once again in a face. And now for something completely different.